call the meeting to order, and we're going to start with information on the Office of Technology. The don't look like we have a quorum present, so Krista will take the roll call. We'll keep watching the roll call, and at some point we'll approve of the minutes. But what we're going to start right away with the overview of the Office of the Enterprise Technology, and then the overview of the drive to excellence. Mr. Connor. And members, I talked with Mr. Connor earlier today. We thought we're not going to get, we thought this is so complicated and this reaches over so many agencies, we're probably not going to get into, we're not going to get into the details of the budget. At this time, we'll be doing that at some other time. We're trying to get the concept of what's happening in these two things. Mr. Connor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Gopal Khanna. I'm the state CIO. I also have here with me two of my colleagues from the Office of Enterprise Technology. To my right, our CFO, Larry Freund, and to my left, my colleague, John Lally, Director of Planning and Portfolio Management. I'm indeed honored and privileged to be here today to share with you and give you an overview of the Office of Enterprise Technology, what we've been working on, and where we are going. Should I proceed, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
When I came on board and joined the governor's team on August 15th of 2005, I was quite taken with the huge opportunity that we have before us. The vision as articulated and put together in the Drive to Excellence program that started about 2.5 years ago pretty much crystallized the opportunity for us. The opportunity really is to transform government operations by leveraging technology with a huge potential outcome for our citizens and better government. What we are seeing, Madam Chair and members, is a convergence of two major factors that are at play over here over the next 15-year horizon. On one side of the equation we have, on the demand side we have, changing demographics that is suggesting that the Gen X and the Gen Y and the iPod generation of the citizen of Minnesota are looking to be served 24/7 because that's the kind of services they're getting from their banks, the insurance companies, and almost anything in every industry segment. On the supply side of the equation, we have a situation where our workforce is aging very fast and rapidly in government. Over the next 15 years, up to 50% of our workforce will be either eligible or would have retired. That's a huge and very serious impact. What that really means is that the guts of the government operations could be threatened, and we have a huge risk because of that. When we look at government transformation and look at it over the x-axis and the y-axis, as I call it, and I've put this model together, the challenge that we have before us is to move our government from operating from 9-to-5 operating environment to have a delivery mechanism of 24/7 on one side. On the other side of the equation, we have a need to move away from managing based upon activities and outputs and move towards outcomes management. The challenge and the opportunity is to move Minnesota from the lower left-hand quadrant to the right top quadrant where we can indeed be serving the citizens of the 21st century. Over the last 50 years, government here in Minnesota, we have benefited enormously and immensely from the deployment of technology, going back to the 60s when the first mainframe computers were invented and deployed. At each of these tipping points, as indicated in this graph, government operations have improved and become better because more technologies were available to improve the workflow and improve the services to the citizens. We are once again in our history at a tipping point where there's a convergence of technologies and their availability in a cost-effective manner, which provides a unique opportunity for Minnesota to leverage technologies to better position our state government operations to serve the citizens.
Okay, if I can just ask you a question about that slide.
Yes, Madam Chair.
I note that you have lots of nice, evenly spaced numbers on the x-axis, and you don't have any numbers on the y-axis. Is just that just a free-drawn theoretical curve?
That's a really a conceptual curve. the private sector has reported significant amount of savings. And the,
okay.
the challenge always has been, both in the private sector and the government, is how to measure the benefits to the cost ratio and capture the savings.
Okay. Well, I just, when I see something that looks awfully technical, I like to know to what level of technicality it's correct. So, okay.
Madam Chair, my challenge is to create a framework which will serve as a basis from a technology point of view to serve agencies first and foremost, because at the end of the day, it's all about agency mission, agency programs, and agency services. We are here to serve and make those agency mission possible and more effective. To achieve that, what we need to look at is where the citizens are. Citizens, again, are looking at various forms of connectivity so that they can access their government better and faster. What that requires is building a solutions, a string of solutions over the next 10 years, 15 years, which will make electronic government possible and give access to citizens on an ongoing basis at the 24/7 level. But the moment we open those floodgates, it also creates a huge threat for us, which comes from security. Cybersecurity has become a huge problem for our state and the country as a whole. Today, government sector ranks second after the financial sector, where hackers are trying to invade and get data and information. So it is utterly important that we build a security framework. I'll talk more about that in a few minutes, but thanks to the legislature last year, we did get $1.9 million to start that program. In addition, what we need to recognize is there's a huge opportunity to leverage our IT spend across these silos that have been created over the years and achieve some level of standardization. And beneath that, what we need to build is a framework where we move towards a shared and utility complex, as Drive to Excellence so eloquently pointed out, that there's a huge opportunity for Minnesota to realize huge benefits by creating a shared complex. And finally, our MNET and the telecommunications infrastructure that supports the environment. We have three barriers, Madam Chair. One major barrier is from technology itself. Over the last 25 years, there's been such a huge amount of invention that really helped productivity gains on one side, but it was a double-edged sword. On the other side of the equation, it has really created a very decentralized computing environment for our agencies and for the state of Minnesota. The second challenge we have, which ties into that, is because of that emerging environment over the last 25 years, our funding models are also basically perpetuating and encouraging a siloed environment. And that really leads to the third piece, which is sort of literally opposed to the whole notion of standardization and aggregation. So those are the three major barriers that we see going forward over the next 10 years that we need to address. So how do we go about doing that? I believe there are three key imperatives that need to be perpetuated over the next 10 years. One is service consolidation. And again, through your bipartisan legislation in 2005, you created the framework for doing that. You created the Office of Enterprise Technology, which has commenced work in this area. And again, I'm going to talk more about it. The second component is systems modernization. We do have literally thousands of applications that have been developed over the last 25, 30 years, and they are huge, valuable assets where major investments have been made, and they need to be modernized because the systems as they are today cannot support the 24/7 environment that our citizens are demanding and asking for. And the third component to it, all of it, is business process reengineering. The private sector has done that immaculately over the last 10 years, collapsing their workflow, collapsing the supply chain to get the benefits so that they can do more with less. It's an imperative for Minnesota because 50% of our workforce will be literally retiring in the next 15 years. So as that retirement happens, and not having the ability to replace that workforce one for one could jeopardize our government operations. And the best way to achieve the advantage, competitive advantage, would be through reengineering our business processes. All of this really creates a new paradigm and calls for a major cultural change. So what we're looking at, what have we've been doing? We need to build a world-class organization here in Minnesota, and I believe that it is possible. The work has already commenced. We are building OET with the idea of looking at the best practices, both from the private sector and other state operations that are ahead of us. To name a few, state of Utah, Virginia, Massachusetts, they've all done some good work. Toronto has done an excellent work in building their shared services complex to support the government operations. So we are learning from their best practices and building a world-class organization.
Okay, if I can
yes, ma'am.
Interrupt for just 1 minute. First of all, we noticed that we do have a quorum present, so Representative Hilty moves adoption of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Approved. Motion is approved. Minutes are adopted. I was trying to think back of the history of this. One of the things I was kind of remembering, and that might have been one of those failed Con Crinky initiatives that we would see so often in the past. I thought we kept trying to take out the word enterprise out of your office, and we kept wanting to call it the Office of Technology because we thought that the enterprise was kind of a rosy thing. And it was just pointed out that we were handed out two versions of the handout today. And the first version that you got, which we were supposed to discard because we had the second version, is the Office of Technology. And the second version comes to us with the Office of Enterprise Technology. So is this something that we could still deal with in this session? I have to ask my lead Republican if it's something that he's on the side of. What do you call yourself? What?
After we do the state fossil bill.
Well, I have to... I just checked. What do you want to call yourself, the Office of Technology or the Office of Enterprise Technology?
Madam Chair, good catch. I'm burdened with a lot of old baggage, and very often we get caught up
right
in, is
there,
it Office of Technology or,
I?
Yes, yeah, or even Intertech. So people draw me back to the Intertech days as well. But the new version that you have is the corrected version. There was obviously an error. I apologize.
Still an error in that slide.
We'll fix it, Madam Chair.
Well, don't fix it too fast. We may fix it for
yes,
you.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Should I, for the benefit of the new members that have arrived, should I go back to the very beginning, or would you be
just
so kind to summarize for the benefit?
No. What? The
what we've covered, the theme so far? Or should I
just continue.
So over the last, let's do a quick recap of what we have accomplished over the last 18 months. When I arrived here on August 15th of 2005, the budget session was already behind. The legislature had put together a very powerful vision, a huge agenda for Office of newly created Office of Enterprise Technology, and the funding was not there to do all of that. So we recognize that. However, we also recognize that we cannot wait around for the next legislative session. We really had to commence work with the given resources so we can further the journey that you had set us on. What I'm going to cover over the next few slides is talk about some of our accomplishments over the last 18 months. My first focus was to start building a service delivery organization that was looking into the future rather than looking into the past. And to do that, the first thing I had to do was to merge OT, and as you said, Madam Chair, Office of Technology, again, it keeps coming back to me, and the old ITG, the Intertech Group. We reorganized and built a management team. My management team is pretty much in place right now. We are pleased to have a deputy commissioner as well as on board now, Sarah Schroderhoff, who served in the state government for many years. We now are focusing on developing our staff skills and leveraging the competency. There's so much of knowledge base we have in our workforce, and that needs to be leveraged as they retire, and we need to capture that. We have created service level agreements so that we can start measuring our performance and manage ourselves based upon outcomes. We have built a customer service division, started training our people, and built about a new orientation in our organization. We have been focusing a lot on internal process improvement. At the end of the day, it's all about processes. If we have robust processes, we can serve better and improve and continuously improve. To bring about a continuous innovation at the state, we need to have continuous improvement processes put in place. So we have identified 8 major processes that are critical to us, delivery organization, and we are working on all of them and improving them every day. Do you have a question, Madam Chair?
No.
We've done a lot of work in the area of telecommunications infrastructure service deployment. Two items that I want to point out that we feel very good about is the broadband access that has been extended to additional 193 locations in 93 cities, and now we have reached a point, we have crossed the point of over 1,000 locations statewide and 300 cities. When it comes to voice over IP, which was a technology introduced more than a couple of years ago, we have made major inroads this past 18 months. We are now up to a 7,000 level. Our goal is over the next couple of years to reach 18,000 conversions of telephones using voice over IP technology. In 18 months alone, we've done over 6,000 of those conversions.
I don't know if I'm the only person here who doesn't know what that is, but could you just explain
it? It's a new technology that's available, which is more cost effective using internet protocol and provides faster, cheaper, and better access.
Oh, it's like the private thing is Serpy or something.
Use your internet for your phone.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've used it. I just didn't know what it was called.
We have also expanded and provided more access for video conferencing. We are finding that people are using that capability, and as they become more familiar, it's a technology that is providing great value, especially in classroom situations. We've been able to extend that for additional 85 locations and another 190 rooms. So there might be multiple locations where we have certain locations where we have multiple rooms and access and capabilities available. We have deployed new secure email system, and what that does is it allows capabilities to transfer data and information back and forth in a secure environment. Security is high on my priority and has been right from the day one I arrived here. I quickly recognized that we were way behind in terms of our security controls, procedures, training, involvement, extension in terms of being localized at the agency level versus an enterprise view. The legislative auditor pointed those deficiencies way back in, I believe, December of 2005. It came out with 11 recommendations, 8 findings. We've been furiously working on correcting those recommendations and findings. In addition to that, we've been building this group. Thanks once again to the legislature for the $1.9 million that got us started. We have hired, as of today, 7 people to this team. You had given us an approval of 12, a staff of 12. We've been able to get 7 people. It's a very tough area to recruit and retain people in, because these people are in high demand. We are grateful that we now have a new Chief Information Security Officer, Chris Busey, and he's building the team for us. Another area of opportunity that we recognized very quickly, and Madam Chair, we talked about this way back, was where through standardization we can optimize the utilization of our resources throughout the enterprise. We set about a few skunkworks teams that were focused at looking at opportunities to standardize the desktop standards way back about a year ago. And in 90 days, about 120 people from across multiple agencies, Minsky, K-12, University of Minnesota, counties, boards, got together to define standards, and we went back to the vendor community, and they came up with savings up to 44%. So over the course of the acquisition cycle, we expect about $19 million savings in this category. What was most exciting about this endeavor was how collaborative the environment was, that people are anxious and hungry for change and transformation, and with your leadership and the leadership that the governor has put forth before us, it gives us a unique opportunity to make that happen. We saw a repeat performance again last year. We assembled 30 people from across 20 different entities, and we gave them the charter, clear vision and charter of coming up with standards for servers and storage. They did that, which was accepted enterprise-wide. And once again, we went back, and thanks to Commissioner Badger and her team, and again, this was a team effort, we are able to realize savings in this area also. Again, in addition to savings, the true story over here is the conviction on the part of a large group of people across the enterprise who are willing to come together, change, and transform our government operations. We did the same thing in a couple of other areas. Moving on quickly, enterprise IT consolidation. It's going to be a key critical success factor for us that needs to be managed effectively. What we did when I came on board, I reached out to my commissioner colleagues. The Lieutenant Governor was kind enough to say, let's collaborate and see what we can do for MnDOT. That collaboration resulted in implementing some shared solutions and cost savings as well. We did the same thing for Department of Revenue, effecting savings for Department of Revenue as well and efficiency gains. We are right now in the midst of similar kind of a project with Department of Employee Relations as well. Enterprise application support area is one area that you pointed out in the legislative mandate that was asked to be built, and literally we are building from bottom up. We have taken the lead to work on several Drive to Excellence projects, long-term projects, where we are assisting and providing help in this area. Electronic government services that I talked about, that big green area that needs to be built over the next few years to allow citizen access, has just begun. We are looking at e-licensing opportunities. There are huge opportunities, and we're going to talk more about it when I come back again to discuss the budget request, the governor's budget request in this area. There are opportunities in the document management area, identity management, and access management as well. The work has commenced in all of these areas. Portfolio management. Madam Chair, you called me aside when I first met you and said this is an area of great interest and passion for you, and you felt that we need to have controls over our projects, make sure that they don't go out of go haywire. And by the way, that happens in the industry. It has happened in the private sector, and it has happened in government as well, an area that needs to be managed. I'm grateful that we have a very good team, a startup team that has started focusing in the area. In this area, we have submitted the first ever enterprise portfolio database, I believe yesterday or today, and you have that available now. This is a huge gain from where we were, but not quite where we want to be. A lot of work needs to be done, and we will get there. We have established a statewide project management system, and again, these are all things that we could do within the resources we had by redirecting our focus. Planning, another area that was very critical and high on your list, saying that we need to have a master plan, and the legislature has asked me to submit one, and I will be submitting that very shortly. And I'll today give you a quick overview of eight of our strategies. But what this master plan does is basically, for the first time, creates a framework for a 10-year vision and look. It is not the ultimate plan, because what will happen is that this will become a living document. We'll start with this plan and refine it every year and make it into a living document. We also have our own internal Office of Enterprise Technology strategic plan that guides our own activities and efforts. We are focusing on enterprise architecture as well, because that was another area that was of great concern and as well as of interest to the legislators as I walked around and met them, and we are working on in that area as well. We have Steve Stedman, the former CIO of Revenue, who's extremely knowledgeable in this area, focusing in this area now as the CTO of Office of Enterprise Technology. Governance. We have set up a robust governance structure which consists of three major oversight groups. One is Board of Commissioners. That is the main one, because at the end of the day, the job of Office of Enterprise Technology is to make agencies' missions successful. The Board of Commissioners is an oversight board. We also have enlisted the agency CIOs as an advisory council and reached out to the private sector and put together a bipartisan group from the private sector as well as advisors to give us ideas from outside. And finally, we have commenced our work to align IT budget process with the Department of Finance's budget process. In the past, there were two different processes, totally different, and there was no convergence. Tremendous amount of work has been done between the two agencies to align those. They're not quite perfectly there yet, but I believe with one more cycle, they will be totally synchronized. Going back to the master plan, there are eight key elements, eight key strategies that have been identified. About 80 people from across various agencies got together, participated to identify these strategies, and they're going to be focusing in the area of security, which is extremely important, because as we make government available 24/7, we need to do a lot of work in the area of security. Number two, focusing on building electronic solutions that the citizens can access and access the government 24/7. The third area will be focusing on consolidating, aggregating our computing environments, the data centers. We right now have 90 of them, 32 raised floor data centers, another 58 smaller operations. There really is no need for 90 of them. I see in 10 years, we'll basically have two data centers, one right here in St. Paul that supports all agencies, and another one maybe 50 miles, 75 miles, 100 miles away, and one legislator said, why not 200 miles away in their constituency, and I said, why not? But basically as a backup in disaster recovery site. A lot of work needs to be done in this area. We again have such legacy assets sitting out there that it will require literally four stages of putting them together, aggregating the environment, rationalizing it, integrating it, and finally optimizing it. In the area of systems and business process reengineering, that's going to be the key to our success going forward. We have to collapse our business processes. Technology alone would not do the magic for our state. We have to combine it with a very serious and a concerted effort to collapse our business processes and re-engineer our business processes, because as our workforce retires and leaves government, we've got to be able to find a way to collapse the work processes. IT governance is utterly important, and we're going to continue focusing on building that so that you have more data, information, and fiscal management available on your IT portfolio. IT architecture standards is something that needs to be, and it's a journey. It will not happen one fine morning, because there are so many technologies that are now being used throughout the enterprise, thanks again to the previous wave of technological innovation. But now in the new paradigm, we need to contain and harness that. Overall information management and data that's available, and finally managing our own resources as well. The value proposition at the end of the day is huge for our state. I think we can deliver a 24/7 government that the citizens are looking for. I think we can do it in a more cost-effective manner, and we can build the infrastructure that will be secure and provide the citizens access, as well at the same time giving the legislature and the governor and the executive branch the ability to manage our IT assets in an effective manner. The governor's budget initiatives, quickly to talk about what you'll be seeing for Office of Enterprise Technology, is focused in five areas. One, to help us move forward aggressively with building a security framework. That is an imperative that needs to be done. Second is focusing on enterprise information management, the kind of governance that you're looking for, portfolio management, information management. We need to focus more on that. Third area is going to be building the capabilities and the capacity so that we can build the OET framework and deliver consolidated IT operations. The fourth area is to further our work in the area of e-licensing as one major, first major initiative, and bring that citizen-centric government in our state. And finally, to assist the small agencies. They are suffering big time. As I look at them, there are many boards, etc., that really suffer. They do not have the funding and or the staff to manage their technology environment, so they need support. So those are the five areas that the governor is proposing, and we need those areas desperately. At the end of the day, what excites me personally is that we are building together a bridge for the future for our state. It's an exciting opportunity. I see the stars aligned for the first time. I know there have been transformation conversations in the past. I've been told that many times. But the future before us is just very exciting. The governor has put before us a very powerful and bold vision. The legislature has put together a very clear statute that tells us what needs to be done. We have assembled a management team. We've got collaboration going. And I believe with your help and leadership, we can accomplish this goal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from members of the committee?
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Khanna, I don't know if you're the correct person to ask, but I'm wondering if there's any sort of state policy or agency policies regarding, I guess we'd call, fee neutrality. You have a choice. You can either walk in and renew a license, perhaps, or you can use the Internet to do so. Is there any kind of policy regarding a difference in fees, or conversely a policy that they have to remain the same? And I ask because my recollection is, and it may be faulty, my recollection is that there have been times I have passed on using the internet to do business with state government because it seemed to me it was more expensive. There were convenience charges and other things tacked on that didn't exist if I jumped in the car and drove down to the local license bureau.
Let me put an addendum on to that. That was, if you remember the kind of scandal we had about driver's license or automobile registration things, where it turns out that they were not secure because it was brought on too fast. And I was renewing mine at right about that time, and I thought, aha, saved by my essential cheapness, because it was an extra charge to do it over the internet. So I didn't do it. I just went to ran to the Hennepin County Government Center and did it there. So you are right, but let's get the real answer now.
Madam Chair, Representative Forrest, I'm going to ask my colleague over here, John Lally, to talk about that.
Mr. Lally?
Madam Chair and members, my name is John Lally. I'm Planning Director at OET. There's a variety of policies in many different agencies for a variety of different reasons. In some cases, the services are outsourced, and those fees are used to pay the outsourcing entity. In some cases, there are restrictions on what agencies can do in that regard. For example, as I recall from my days at Revenue, we couldn't allow credit card payments, for example, on taxes because we couldn't charge extra for the payment and the collection of taxes, but absorbing that cost would have been extremely expensive. If you look at 2 or 3% of our income tax, for example, it gets price prohibitive. So there is no central policy. It tends to reflect the financial structure of the agencies and how they actually carry out the operations of e-government.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could just ask a follow-up, sure. Then. Give me some comfort in that our state agencies aren't out there acting like Ticketmaster. Sonny Elliott isn't in here, I don't think. They're acting like Ticketmaster and tacking on big convenience charges in order to line pockets.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative De La Forest, I'm not aware of anybody using this as a profit center. I can't promise you that it's going to be equally the same in each agency. I simply don't know.
Okay. I don't feel better, but thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Zeller.
Thank you. Mr. Khan, you and I have met and talked about this many times, and I share your passion. I think the committee, if nothing else, can see that we've got the right guy in the right place at the right time. Your passion, your knowledge, your initiative on this is beyond anything I've seen in government thus far. I want to get an idea where we are when it comes to other states, you know, around the country, you know, for as far as where we are today, where we're looking to go, and then maybe some of the, you know, share with the committee some of the what you've seen from other states. When, granted, some of them may not be comparable in size and budget, but in some of their savings and some of in enacting some of the things that we're talking about here.
Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, I have looked at other models, and I'm a member of the National State CIO Association of State CIOs, and do get a chance to talk to my colleagues throughout the country. There are islands of excellence all over the country. My colleague, Commissioner Dana Badgero, a couple of years ago, I believe, and visited even the Toronto operation and saw how well they were performing. So there are states that are doing quite well. Utah has done a good job. I think there's many areas where the state of Maine has done a very good job. And other states, the opportunity we have as a state, we were a little bit late in coming to the game. However, thanks again to the Drive to Excellence program and the focus on that, the governor put in the first term, that we are now at a point where we can really far exceed where the other states might be, because we have a lot of advantages. We are a state that is not as large as New York and Massachusetts and California. I wouldn't even know where to start if I was in California, I'm going to be honest with you. But over here, we know that we know our universe. It's very manageable. The people have been just phenomenal in terms of taking an enterprise view, because that requires a huge cultural shift. Our focus is right, and we have embarked upon a lot of programs that are helping us put together a very comprehensive approach. So we do, with what we have put in place, I think we have a unique opportunity to become a leader state, I think, in a very short time.
Yeah, just one other. And then as far as some of the savings, and this is maybe more comment but also question, Madam Chair, as well, some of the savings that we're seeing, I would hope that we're returning them, you know, if we save on a platform, returning them back and investing technology, but I think that we're in some cases maybe not being allowed to do that, and it, you know, maybe give us an idea for a dollar of savings to reinvest, what kind of how fast we could speed up the plan. I kind of have an idea, I know the question, but I would like to the rest of the committee as well this year.
Madam Chair, Representative Zelis, you're absolutely right. We do not have all the mechanisms in place today to capture the savings. And that's one thing that, Madam Chair, we have talked about as well, that right now what happens is that when savings happen, they get taken away, and there's no incentive for innovation. And there's a need to plow that savings back into further modernization. And very often we get caught up in counting the savings and looking for savings first. There has to be a huge investment made in modernizing our infrastructure. If you look at the Drive to Excellence report, it talks about a very substantial investment that is needed to modernize before we will realize the ROI. ROI will happen, but I think so we need to put our focus in what needs to be built, modernization and investment. I believe the ROI will happen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, thank you for your testimony. And I'll give you just a quick background. I actually work at an IT company that is a vendor to county and school districts in the area of data aggregation. And so I have some experience in managing these kinds of projects. Not direct, but I have observational. I've had a chance to observe it at close hand. And the question that I have is, one challenge is that IT staffs at various enterprises that you're dealing with, agencies, want to run their own show. And I'm guessing that when your people come in and say, we need to change the way you're doing it, there's a lot of resistance. And, you know, it may be not, you know, it doesn't have to be active resistance. Passive resistance can be just as damaging. And I guess I'm curious to know, I guess, the size of your staff versus the size of agency staff, how you interact, how that works, and if there's going to be a change of a reduction in force at agency IT staffs and move it more towards a centralized role, or how that's all going to play out. Because I see that there must be a lot of conflict there.
Let me make that question a little bit more specific, because it's an issue in state government that I've been. And so I think what Representative Winkler is referring to is the language in 16E.03, subdivision 3 and subdivision 4. And I'll pass it to him so he can see what he's talking about.
Thank
he
you.
Probably doesn't know yet. On the evaluation approval and the evaluation approval. And then 16E.04, the informations and the thing about the 16E.0465, I think the appropriations, the larger appropriations. And I think what he's asking is, how does your, when you read this, you have complete power over approving these things. And he's asking what happens when there's a conflict. And I'll pass it to him so he can see what he's talking about.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I've been on this job a little over 18 months. And coming in, I quickly realized that there are 2-3 strategies. Coming from the private sector, I know that people always resist change. That's human nature. Why it happens, I don't know. But we do all resist change, even in the private sector. Even though we all rave about all the good stuff in the private sector, the truth of the matter is we resist change there as well. Will there be resistance to change over here? Yes, sir. Absolutely. There's no question about that. However, I am pleased to report that I've never in my life seen so much of excitement for change as well. To be able to assemble 120 people from 20, 30 different government entities and have them work together and in 90 days come up with desktop standards is a miracle. As a matter of fact, other states are saying, how did we make it happen here? And that's what is the exciting part of the story and gives me hope that there are possibilities. Surely there'll be resistance to change, because at the end of the day, my biggest barrier is technology bigots. I'm a Mac bigot. I'm a Microsoft bigot. I'm such a DB2 bigot. And those are turf wars. And I wish they were not there.
I think they're actually holy wars, but...
Mac, IBM, holy wars.
So,
crusade.
And it'll be a challenge. It will not be easy, but I believe that as we bring this collaborative atmosphere and as we bring the value proposition, change will happen. Now, there will be situations where I'll have to, as Madam Chair, you pointed out, to have exert the authority and take appropriate action if I have to. But I believe by bringing parties together, we can have a climate of innovation and change, which is far more powerful than by just imposing standards. So what we've done is we've set up a lot of Skunk Works teams, we've engaged a lot of people, and at times the people from various agencies have said, that's too much, because it's too much involvement too. And we've had to sort of scale back a little bit, but we want to keep them engaged, so that it's our computing center. OET really becomes State of Minnesota Computing Environment, not OET as an agency itself, and that will be the what will make Minnesota different and successful, going back to the question that was asked earlier.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. And the other part of my question was, do you foresee a migration of IT staffs away from silos and into more of a centralized role? Because, ultimately, the productivity gains that you're going to see from this is going to either going to result in reduction in force in all the agencies who are repeating work, or those jobs could potentially funds could transfer into other types of jobs that might create better service for customers. But at that point, that also seems to me is a cause of friction. I don't know what the plan is in that migration.
Mr. Khan?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, yes, I do see that happening. It has already commenced. When we merged the data center with the Department of Revenue this past year, about 13 staff members have become part of OET staff. And so I see as we do this rationalizing and consolidation, that will happen, yes, sir. And over a period of time, you will see outcomes that will be more cost-effective. And I'm hoping that as people retire, we'll be more judicious about what kind of skills we bring in, new skills, or not replace the old skills at all. So there will be value proposition, both in terms of efficiency gains as well as cost reduction. And to answer your question, yes, sir, I do expect consolidation to happen and them becoming part of OET staff. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from other committee meetings? Well, I have a couple. One of the things, what's happening with CRIMNET? How are they falling under this?
Madam Chair, as the state CIO, I sit on the policy group that oversees the CRIMNET program. I'm very pleased coming from outside, and I know there's a lot of history with CRIMNET. I've seen good project management. I've seen a very thoughtful approach to the task force giving ideas and then getting prioritized and then getting identified as items that will require action. I would defer, of course, to the executive director, Dale Good, to come and testify and give you the status on CRIMNET. But as a member of the policy group, I believe they're taking the right approach. It's a very substantial undertaking. And one of the challenges in any development effort leveraging technology is that if the scope becomes very large, then the accomplishments are not very evident, because the scope creep just makes it very burdensome. CRIMNET is a very large undertaking. But the good side that I see is there's robust and strong project management. They have a very strong project manager. And they have deliverables identified, so they're meeting them, and I'm very encouraged, and I would defer to Dale Good to come and give you a detailed testimony.
One of the questions that we have is, how is the prioritizing of information coming in? For example, is federal information coming into CRIMNET now? I mean, there was one of the things that some of us who were somewhat critical of the process thought was that you ought to have some sense of prioritization of what level crimes would be recorded in CRIMNET and what level. We're also, I think, in some of my information is a couple of years old, but we were disturbed about the lack of connection to federal systems like NCIS and what's happened with all of those things?
Madam Chair, to the best of my knowledge, Dale Good and his team, they're working very closely with the Justice Department, and I would once again defer to them to come and give you a detailed rundown on exactly some of your questions. It's a little bit deeper than what I'm aware of at this point in time.
Well, we thought reading 16E.03 and all those that we only had to ask you, that we didn't have to go have these people from other divisions get mad at us because we look at what's going on in their divisions. So, you know, there are silos in the legislature,
Absolutely.
Too. Okay. The other question that I have, again, looking at your website, you know, it's one of the things that the legislature seems to be a little ahead of the executive branch on. We were able to get all those excess words on it so that the website is just house.mn or senate.mn. Why don't you join us in doing that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll look into that right away.
Hey, Madam Chair, thank you. And a question for Mr. Kind of consistent with your talk, Madam Chair, the silos. We confronted this, as you may recall, in 2005. I think there was talk at that time, and I think there was a lot of buy-in on this committee about consolidating and centralizing these IT services, yet that didn't stop us from seeing a variety of budget requests, as I call it, to increase the IT staff for particular state agencies. And I'm just wondering, seriously, Mr. Kana, is it your intent and the intent of the administration that increases, if any, for IT resources should be in your office and under your auspices, and we shouldn't see, for example, DNR requesting increases in IT resources? Help me discern what I should be looking for in this regard when we move into considering particular budget requests through this committee.
And then, again, dealing with the problem of the legislative silos is we don't get to see, until we get to finance, we don't get to see if DNR has an increase in that request. So that's a problem for us. That's why we depend on you to give us access to that information.
Madam Chair, Representative De La Forest, you've pointed out to a very serious problem, and that's one of the barriers I talked about. Because technology has been decentralized, the funding mechanisms have been decentralized as well, and that creates a huge challenge for us to bring that pendulum back. We've done several things to help alleviate that. It's not a perfect solution yet, but we will get there. Step one, what the governor has done is, for the first time, really packaged all the technology and has talked about technology investments, and you'll see that in the governor's budget, which identifies not only OET requests but other critical requests as well for systems modernization. So that's the first major step.
Okay. My specific question then, trailing right in that, is that does that request come particularly to us, or does it get decided by all those divisions? Where do those in the summary, it looks like it's one piece, but does it appear in all those separate agencies?
Madam Chair, I believe it will appear separately right now, because that's how it's taking an old legacy process and trying to change it is also the challenge that we have. And right now, the agencies that have oversight would want to see that and need to see that. So what we plan to do in this first phase is work very closely with finance and the agency management team, so that we have a coherent approach for you, for this committee, as well as for other committees. So in this session, what we're going to do is align that so that we can start mitigating some of these siloed approaches. Will you see a one lock, stock, and barrel change? No, that won't happen. I think so we have to ease into the solution. But Madam Chair and Representative De La Forest, you have pointed out a thing that has been of concern to me personally.
Well, you know, that was what rigorous application of the 16E, various parts of 16E, should have prevented, and that's been in place since the 80s. Before that, I think it was actually in place maybe even in the 60s.
And Madam Chair, I'll ask my colleague who's overseeing the policy issues to talk about that as well.
Madam Chair, one of our concerns, obviously, is that we identify redundancies in areas for opportunities for sharing. But the other is that we not separate the technology decisions from the underlying business purpose. Technology without a business purpose has no value. So in our budget process this year, we've worked very closely with the Department of Finance so that we evaluated all of the IT requests as a group and looked for those areas where we said, well, why are you investing in this when this capability exists elsewhere? And help winnow down the number of requests to look at the ones that are unique. There are assets in the budget going to individual agencies, largely for agency-specific initiatives for which we have no capability. This will be an evolutionary process. It's going to take probably 5 to 10 years before the consolidation of the shared utility functions is complete, simply because of the life cycle of these systems. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a number of other years before those agencies can shift their focus over onto business-specific initiatives that they should run in their own agencies. So, but it is better. For all my years of complaining about this process in the past, it is better than it's ever been.
Okay. My concern was not so much of having a separate application in an agency, but my concern was the fact that the snake oil salesmen got to go to the agencies and make their pitch, and that there was no one with the expertise to look at it seriously, which is why I was so intent on having the parts of 16E rigorously adhered to. I didn't care, you know, and obviously things change. I didn't care so much that all of the technologies be shared, but I didn't want people making decisions because they had seen something at a trade show or something.
Madam Chair, and that's why we tried to put such an emphasis on three components of this, this new OET that we're trying to create. One is on managing that portfolio as a portfolio. Is the acceleration of the architectural standards so that people are limited in their choices, and that may seem like this isn't the American way, but in fact, unless we limit choices, we can't have the economies and the standardization and the reliability we need. And the third piece of it is to try to recognize the fact that we simply cannot move from where we are to where we want to go. We're going to have convergent strategies that work with the agencies and with technologies to try to put us where we want to be a few years out from here. And so all of our efforts so far have been trying to set a set of standards, a process for project management, a process of review and oversight that is within OET's purview, and put these things all into place.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to comment. You made a good point, Madam Chair, and Senator. We rely on you folks to advise us regarding these matters, and I understand there is a transition period. This isn't going to be a bright line that we cross and suddenly you own everything and you control everything. But I'm wondering if you have the resources, are there any plans to advise this committee regarding IT requests from other state agencies? Will you help us? Can you help us in helping us decide whether or not these IT requests that we may consider in crafting an omnibus bill are consistent with your mission and meet your goals in fostering this transition? Can you help us out?
Madam Chair, Representative De La Forest, in the portfolio that just came up here is included our analysis of each of the initiatives, includes recommendations on directions they ought to take. And in some cases, they are recommendations for specific direction, others more general. But we were trying to get them to a common standard of assuring that the project management is in place, that they are operating according to standards that are meet what would be collectively termed best practices.
Okay.
That's what we're trying to do. So you will see that advice in that book where that disc, which I believe was delivered to your office today.
Okay. Who wins when there's a fight?
That's a political decision, Madam Chair. I'm a technician.
Okay. No, according to 16E, you guys win. You make all the decisions.
Well, Madam Chair, my hope is that we all win together.
Okay, the other question I have is, one of the things that I've been interested in is this this thing that I've been hearing about Best Buy and their new practices of people being able to work from anywhere, so that we don't have to have people in their offices from 8 to 5. And it seems to me that this is something that we ought to be interested in having state, you know, it's terrible that, maybe it's not terrible, but now that Best Buy is the model for doing this, how far behind should state government be on doing this? And particularly in this place where we're looking at service delivered 24/7, why can't we have people working? You know, why can't we have people delivering that service from anywhere that suits them 24/7?
Madam Chair, that will have an impact on state government operations as well, and that's another area that John has been working on. So,
Madam Chair, the telecommuting policy is archaic. In place right now. It dates back to, I think, 1996, which is a lifetime ago in the area of technology. Right now, the closest thing to a technology policy around telecommuting is it's up to the agencies to decide whether it's appropriate from a work standpoint and a technology standpoint that they can guarantee the productivity and security, but we are encouraging them to take advantage of the new technologies that do exist. where that's appropriate. But we think that's a decision that remains with the agencies at this point. As we do more in the area of security, as we create a more robust network and one that makes that possible, we can try to move more people towards the ability to work from a home, from an agency, from a customer site, all of those things. Instead of making people come to us, we can go to them. But we're still years away from having a practical implementation of all that. Simply, a lot of the underlying technologies do not lend themselves yet to that kind of an implementation.
Well, just again, reading 16E.05, the Government Information Access, the language on capital investment says, and again, I don't know, you know, we kind of just pass a number, and then we that no state agency may propose or implement a capital investment plan for state office building unless they've developed a plan for increasing telecommuting by state employees, or they've shown why such a plan is not practical. Do we have that for all of the new capital investments that we've done? Is that clause been invoked?
Madam Chair, the Department of Administration involves us in all of those project analysis, but I'd be misleading you if I said that we do a robust effort at trying to encourage telecommuting that way. We simply don't have the resources to do it. They do have to meet the requirement. We see that they have at least met the form of the requirement. Oh,
okay. So when we write this into the statute, we have to say we really want this. We have to add the language. We really want this to be done.
No, we really
we really mean it.
It takes two release to.
Well, we just know because we're doing another.
We try to encourage it.
We may not have a big capital investment bill this year, but you know, next year, maybe you got to tell us what we need to say. Okay. Someone else had something.
To that point.
Representative Zeller.
Yeah, to that point, Madam Chair, for Mr. Kahana, what about the baby boomer, you know, bubble or glut or whatever is going to create? I mean, for the telecommuting, for, you know, maximizing some of the technology for efficiencies, you know, so that we do know whether it's a bonding bill this year or next year or wherever, what kind of a timeline are we looking at? I mean, I telecommute every day, and that's not a problem. We have many people, and we use a VPN network, so it's no problem for security. But, you know, how much time do we really have when it comes to the baby boomers, technology, where some of our workforce is? And I wouldn't want to try to break out agency by agency, but just as a generalization, you know, what kind of a timeline are we looking at? So if we have to speed up, which I think we do, but I'm not going to be the expert on that.
Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, we are behind the curve and we have catching up to do. And again, my challenge over the last 18 months has been to work with the existing resources on many fronts and put them all and get them focused and aligned with the intent of the statute as well. And I'm hoping that as we get additional resources this biennium, it'll give us the capacity and the capabilities we need to address some of these unanswered questions as well as issues that have not been taken, have been addressed yet. So we are behind the curve, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have another question in different tact. As you're dealing with various agencies, some of the IT and business process leaders are going to be more advanced than others, more forward-thinking and more on top of things. Do you play a consulting role in business process improvement, or is that something you've thought about doing? Basically reviewing, not just sort of taking what they're asking for and saying, does this make sense from a common sort of platform point of view, but actually going out, working with them and saying, you know, there are technologies available that would actually make you much more efficient in how you deliver these services.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, that's one of the requests we have in our budget for the biennium. We do not have those capabilities in-house right now, and we need to develop them because, once again, the intent of the statute calls for that as well. And so we really are not doing that, and that's a core competency that needs to be built. A, B, it's going to be critical to moving forward and achieving the transformation that we're looking for. So you're absolutely right, sir.
One of the concerns, and you've kind of touched on it a little bit, that I know people may have concerns in protection of the silos and protection particular jobs. I'm more concerned with how much tendency we're going to have to outsource out of state government. I really like the idea of building the capability in state government. I'm not, though, crazy about how much stuff that we outsource, unless it really makes sense to buy a commercial, you know, if the commercial program is out there, we obviously ought to buy it. But you know, I'd rather have more, and I think we did something in the statute about allowing you to pay, like doctors. Don't we allow IT people to be paid more, like we allow doctors to be paid more, or do we not? I think we did, but I'm concerned. You know, I would rather have the expert for security reasons and for efficiency. I'd rather have I'd rather not have outsourcing be the first thing that we look at.
Madam Chair, I absolutely agree with you 1,000%. As a matter of fact, I'll consider it to be a personal failure if we are unable to insource and build the best complex in the country. We have all collectively failed. And if the challenges that were pointed out in terms of resistance, are those barriers are gone, there's no reason in the world why we cannot build the best insourcing model for our state. It'll be the last thing that would have to be done if it has to be outsourced. Now, I do know that other states have gone that route because they were unable to break those silos and those barriers. So the legislature reacted and the governors reacted, and they, be it the county of San Diego or some other states, they have outsourced. But there's no reason why we cannot build our own complex based upon the guidance and what the statute calls for. It can be done. We have the capacity, we have the capabilities, we have the ability to do it. There's no reason in the world why we should not be able to do it.
Well, an example of something that was that has been outsourced is the I saw lots of reasons why that was, I thought, a bad solution, but the DNR State Park Reservation System is something that's outsourced. And it just seemed to me, I remember talking to some worker in a park who thought that she could really run it for the whole section if she was given the go-ahead. You know, I agreed that the situation of each park making its own reservations made no sense. But, you know, I'm not, and the answer was there was no decent bid from anywhere. And I don't know if it was really true that state park reservations could only be done by someone out of the state, but...
Madam Chair, I wouldn't be able to comment on that specific situation. When I talk about this whole notion of outsourcing or insourcing, I'm right now talking in the context of IT complex. Mm-hmm. Now, each agency may have unique business processes that it makes sense to outsource within the state or outside. That's a different business decision. But talking in the context of IT services and IT complex, I believe we can do it here within our state. Mm-hmm.
Any other?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Khanna, you have mentioned in here a couple of times that you've worked with or MinSKU has been a part of some things. And I just have a question about MinSKU. I know is having some technology needs, and they'd like to have some money to be able to work with that. And it kind of goes back to a couple of other questions that have been raised. I'm just wondering about your relationship with MinSKU as far as the technology needs that they have. If you give your stamp of approval of what their request is, do you have a relationship that tells us this is what their plan is going to meet their needs, and how far into the future what their plan is will actually accommodate what their needs are?
Madam Chair, Representative, you've asked several questions. So I'm going to try and parse them and answer some, and I'm going to ask John to address the portfolio part of it, the requests coming up. Number one, we have received tremendous cooperation from MinSKU, from Chancellor McCormick and their CIO, Ken Nimi. I cannot say enough good things about it. Number two, the MNET that we have deployed over the years, which started in 1993, is anchored around university collaboration with the University of Minnesota, MinSKU, and K-12. So the education community at large is very much engaged in the deployment of these solutions. So they've been extremely good partners with us, and they are working with us on many committees in many areas. In regard to their specific request coming up for this biennium, I'll let John address again, because that was part of the analysis we did with finance department.
Madam Chair and Representative, the leadership, the IT leadership at MinSKU is working very closely with us, as Gopal mentioned. When it came to the budget process, we sat down with Ken Nimi and reviewed their general budget request that they were bringing, which was primarily around the area of integrating their campuses. Essentially, they're trying to do for the 60-odd campuses of Minsky what we're trying to do for 60-odd agencies of state government. And so we're trying to stay coordinated with them and be consistent in our approaches and our practices. But we didn't give them the same detail analysis that we gave some of the other agencies. We simply tried to keep it coordinated and make sure that we're moving in the same directions so that we would be supportive. But they are absolutely essential to our long-range strategies. One of their IT executives chaired our telecommunications strategy team in the master planning process, and we've been working very closely with them from the beginning.
Can I ask just one follow-up, please? Thank you, Madam Chair.
If I just point out in answering that question, again, looking at 16E.03, subdivision 1, Minsky is specifically excluded from the controls in this unless they're put in somewhere else.
This has been a voluntary effort that they've wanted to engage us with. So.
Yeah.
Thank you. I did have a follow-up question. Thank you. And I know, again, that Minsky would be asking for some IT people to go along with the technology. And I'm just wondering, is there a sense of, for the future, I'm not an IT person, like I know some people sit here and are, is there a life cycle that IT is so rapidly changing and improving, do you get to a point where even for the IT people, they kind of work themselves out of a job? And if you're looking at forward thinking, you know, and you're adding people that are doing IT work, is there some sort of formula that you kind of look at and say, okay, we know that if you add 100 people now for IT, in 10 years you're going to be down to 25 or something like that? I guess I'm just trying to get a longer range kind of understanding of IT and with personnel. Thank you.
Madam Chair, for a second, I'll defer to John and come back and address that as well.
Madam Chair, Representative, in our planning processes, we don't assume that reduction of IT staff is going to be a natural outcome. We have to look at the overall processes that are involved. You may have a situation where non-IT staff are reduced because you replace manual effort with technological effort. So it's really hard to predict on a global scale what's going to happen. We know we've got to address the declining numbers through retirement and so on, and address the competitiveness that we have for attracting and retaining IT staff. So we know those kinds of things are out there for both of us and for Minsky. Where we're looking at the greatest opportunities for institutional cooperation is around infrastructure and facilities and that sort of thing. So we're talking actively with Minsky right now. Can our vision of having two state data centers that are redundant and load-bearing and share the ability to back each other up and back up other agencies, can that coexist and support Minsky? And also we're talking to Steve Cawley at the University of Minnesota about that, because there are opportunities there that definitely can result in improved service quality and reliability and security and control the growth of costs in those areas. You get into the application areas of what supports higher ed, what supports agencies and their customers, it's really a case-by-case basis where you have to make the analysis. The global trends just break down when you start getting into the specifics.
Okay. Well, these people will be back when we get into the budget details. So we did have another item on the agenda with Commissioner Badgero into the drive to excellence, and we really need to get to that, I think. So thank you very
Madam
much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Dana Badgero, Commissioner of Administration. I also have the pleasure of serving as the chair of the Governor's sub-cabinet on the Drive to Excellence. Drive to Excellence is actually getting a little mature. It's been around for a little over 2 years. In April of 2005, the Governor signed 5 executive orders and 1 reorganization order, kicking off the first 6 projects. You just heard about one. The creation of the Office of Enterprise Technology was really the first, and I think our most notable and most impactful project thus far. And, of course, it is ongoing, and it's in turn spawning additional projects and additional opportunities. But there's more to drive than just technology and enterprise technology. I'm going back to just review quickly a couple of quick slides, because some of you were not here during the creation of the Drive to Excellence in the first Pawlenty term. And just to say that here's what was really driving this whole initiative. One, citizens just keep asking for more. We know our constituents want more and more from government. At the same time, we also know that even though we now have a surplus, it's never enough. There's always a need to find ways to do things within limited budgets and to do more within limited budgets. And then finally, we do have, and I think this is now quite public, we have a demographic issue in state government, which is basically, Gopal talked about 50% of the state workforce retiring by the year 2015. That's one out of every two employees is eligible to retire. But that's not, that's kind of far out. I moved the numbers in a little closer to just 2010, which is right around the corner if you think about it. One in four employees in the state of Minnesota is eligible to retire. And in some agencies, it's even more drastic than that. The Department of Employment and Economic Development, for example, 40% of employees will be eligible to retire by the year 2010. So we have several choices. We can either try and hope that in the diminishing workforce, we will find replacements for these people, or we can reform the way in which we do work so that it can be more automated and done with greater productivity. So Gopal has really actually already mentioned a lot of these goals. They're the same for the Office of Enterprise Technology. But basically what the Drive to Excellence is about is not the frontline delivery of service. It doesn't affect how we operate state hospitals. It doesn't affect how the corrections facilities are run. It is intended to impact the kinds of services that are done in either, you can call them the back room or back office or business service function, that are pretty much done the same way agency to agency. And to be honest with you, an agency ought to be indifferent as to where those services are provided as long as they're done cost effectively and responsively. We do want agencies to focus on what really counts in their agency, not on processing accounts payable and receivable and expense reports and doing employee orientation and benefits sign-up. They need to be focusing on their core missions. We can take advantage of new technologies, and we can improve business processes. So here's what happened. A little over 2 years ago, a group of 200 state employees assisted with a Deloitte contract generated ideas. They started out with actually over 400 ideas for improvement. Those got winnowed down to about 100. Business cases were written, and we produced and published on the web 24 very detailed business cases around different areas for reform of state government. We couldn't do all 24. It would have. We don't have the resources. We don't have the people. We have jobs to do, most of us. But we did pick out six, and the governor selected six to initiate, and I want to talk about those six, one of which has already been discussed, and two more that we've added since. But I have to go back now to Madam Chair's issue with enterprise and just talk about the basic philosophy of the Drive to Excellence. And it's really simple. It is looking at state government as a whole. And if you want to use the term enterprise or single business unit or whatever other term you want to use for it, and I do think terms are important to convey a sense of what we're trying to do.
How about state?
State. All right. I would note, however, Madam Chair, that one an institution of which you're fairly fond, the University of Minnesota, has also used the word enterprise in its long-range strategic plan. But it doesn't matter what we use. It really doesn't. We have to stop replicating all of these functions agency by agency in 24 cabinet-level agencies. We're doing it differently in most departments, and we're doing it inefficiently in most departments. So it's simply looking at state government in a different way, a pyramid. At the top of the pyramid, the apex, are those things that agencies do best. We want them to do them best, and we want them to focus on it. In the middle are some things that are more support service, and they may be done by a cluster of agencies. And then, finally, there are utility functions, just plain utilities functions. You turn on the faucet, and you get the function, and it comes out plain vanilla. We want to focus on those utility functions, consolidate them, make them more efficient, and therefore perform them with fewer people. Okay, our second project upon which we declared success was the consolidation of building codes. So five separate building code enforcement offices were moved from state agencies into the Department of Labor and Industry, taken from the Department of Commerce, the Department of Health, our own Building Codes and Standards Division in the Department of Administration, The boiler and high pressure piping, which was already in labor, and the electric Board of Electricity. Those five functions actually merged in May of 2005, and since that time, and they're all now located in the Labor and Industry Building, we've saved on the lease expenses where those other agencies were leasing private space, and more importantly now, builders, construction people throughout the state can go to a single place and get a consistent answer around code application and enforcement. And in addition now, they're applying single systems, inspections, and with much greater efficiency. And I think if the construction industry here were here, they would tell you that this has been an unqualified success. IT, I don't even need to cover. You just spent the last hour and a half on that topic. But let me say that another really big project, which is ongoing and will continue to have a lot of activity, is what we've called strategic sourcing. This is how we buy, commodities and services as a state. The Department of Administration has certain statutory authority and has been the central buying office for the state for many years. But typically, our philosophy has been if an agency wants it, we'll buy it. We have not really tried to enforce common standards around any particular commodity, and so oftentimes we'll have multiple contracts for the same commodity. Gopal mentioned the desktop and laptop contracts. Well, until we had consensus among the users that a single image of a laptop or desktop would be acceptable, we could not go to the vendor community and say, please give us your best possible price on this image, because that's all the state's going to buy. And that's when we got the up to 44% price reductions. By the way, I want to mention that K through 12 has been the largest single beneficiary of those price reductions. So throughout the state, local units buy off of these contracts, and they're finding them quite useful. So what we've done so far is we now have a common single standard for cell phones. There are three providers of cell phones throughout the state, one for the Twin Cities or central area, one for the northern and southern regions. You only, as a state employee, you have one choice of cell phone. When I came to state government, I was given a list of 48 different options that I might choose from, including cameras and other kinds of devices. Now I have but one choice, and I have but one provider. Through that, we were able to say...
Do you get cameras and music, and can you put your iPod on it?
Madam Chair, no. No iPods are available. Through that, we have now transitioned most state agencies to these three new contracts. We do still have a couple of pockets of service issues with our providers, but soon we will have all of our, every single cell phone in the state will be one of these three providers and using a single instrument. So the savings there were rather significant. We estimate well over $1 million just right off the bat, but at the same time, we also issued a cell phone policy because state policies were not uniform as to how cell phones could be used. So now we have a statewide policy developed by the deputy commissioners of agencies around the exclusive use of state phones for state business, and we're very clear about that. But we have lots of other things, office chairs, desk furniture, storage and servers that were already mentioned, more commodities coming up. We are now going to start focusing on service contracts. We are going to look at a uniform purchasing card that will include a rebate, copying from the state of California. So many, many more things are coming in the strategic sourcing area. Licensing was already mentioned in the context of the system. This is business and professional licenses. We have over 600 in the state of Minnesota, administered by many, many agencies, some with paper and pencil kinds of tests and applications, and some with very sophisticated online systems. It is oftentimes difficult for someone applying for a professional license to know where to go for that license because typically the applications and information were buried in the website or information of that individual agency. Did you know, for example, if you wanted a frog dealer's license, you went to the DNR? Maybe not. So what we did as a first step, very simple step, was to create a single web page called License Minnesota. Had over 1.2 million hits last year. And what now people can do, if they want a business and professional license, they go type in a keyword, frog dealer. It will take them immediately to the page of the agency and give all of the information with respect to that license. That's a very simple first step. What we really want to do is have the whole process online so that then having once gone to that website, you can either apply for or renew your license, including the input of your professional continuing education information, the payment of the fee. And so the budget request that you will see, or that will be, I believe it will be seen in the OET budget, is for a single one-stop shop for business and professional licenses, and that came out of this DRIVE project. Grant management, I'm not sure if this committee has heard from the OLA, but there was a recent OLA report around the grants to nonprofits. As it turns out, we've been looking at grants for 2 years. There's been a very dedicated cross-agency group involving not just the agencies who make grants, but also members of the nonprofit community, and cities and counties have been part of this team, looking at how we make grants in the state. And it is, again, a patchwork quilt of processes. So a poor nonprofit, especially a nonprofit with few resources, has to confront a different application process, a different payment form, a different method of tracking results in every single agency. And so this DRIVE team recommended the creation of a very small central resource for the management of grants, which will take all of these processes and come up with a common single grant contract and a common set of documentation and processes for use by all state agencies. We have been testifying. The OLA audit report, by the way, recommends the same thing, so it is quite serendipitous. There is a small budget request that will be coming before this committee for the creation of that office. Real property. We own 5,000 buildings in the state of Minnesota, and we have over 800 commercial leases. I could not tell you what they all are. Much like our IT inventory, we do not have a single database or repository of all of those holdings. We probably could come up with the list of what we own, but we do not know its condition. We do not know it's on an enterprise basis, on a statewide basis. And agencies have varying degrees of knowledge about what they own. So we don't know the condition of the roofs. We don't know the occupancy rates of many of those buildings. So we may have space in a particular area in a state-owned building, but we are another agency is going out and leasing property in that same region because they don't know that that space is available. So what we need, it's a pretty simple request. We just need a system to collect all of the data with respect to what we own. But most importantly, its condition. Now, when we come to you all for a capital budget request and we're asking you for asset preservation money, preventive maintenance kind of money, how in the world do you prioritize who you give the money to? Because you can't trade off. You don't know what condition of building Y is better than building X. We will be able to provide you that data. We can provide you a rank order of the desperate needs for preventive maintenance across all state agencies with this system. There is a budget request. We have issued a request for proposal and have selected a vendor. Helpfully, that vendor already has an installed base in several agencies, so we are familiar with that vendor's system and what it will do. We are, this is one case where, to answer Representative Zellers, we are pretty far behind in terms of implementing a statewide system for tracking our real property. But once we've tracked, we know what we own, it's not, that won't get us there. Much like Gopal, we have to have a governance structure that talks about how we're going to manage it. So we have a very active cross-agency team of the people involved in real property, and they are going to design for us and come to you with a proposed governance structure for how we manage the state's buildings. Let me just give a footnote here because somebody typically asks. This project does not encompass DNR lands nor MnDOT lands upon which there are no buildings. So rights of way and wetlands and lands that are really what I'll call mission specific to a particular agency that are not used for state offices are not embraced by this project. MAPS is the Minnesota Accounting and Procurement System, and it was its system dates to 1995. It was actually authorized in 1992, but we have been operating the basic payroll, procurement, and finance system of the state on a system that was designed at a time when we did not have web-based systems. And it is an old technology in many, many ways, and it is vulnerable. So this project looks at what do we do next, and we'll be coming with a recommendation for a replacement for at least the finance, the accounting, and the procurement pieces of that. We aren't ready with that recommendation quite yet, but this team, cross-agency team, will be coming to the legislature with that recommendation. Fleet. We have 8,000 passenger vehicles in the state of Minnesota managed by five primary agencies. Again, it's much like our real property. Anytime the legislature asks us how many cars we have, we've got to go agency by agency and count. The first thing we are doing is implementing a system, a single system. Fortunately, we don't have to come to you for money for that. We found the money to buy the system and implement it across these agencies. This is a project being led actually by MnDOT, but actively engaged in by admin, DNR, public safety, and the patrol. And what we will do is we will then know what we own, but we will also be able to understand the utilization of the passenger vehicles that we have, and we can understand better how we can deploy the cars that are underutilized. For example, we can either extend their life cycles, replace them, or cancel them. So Georgia, for example, found that it was able to reduce its fleet size by 10% simply by looking at it on an enterprise basis. In addition, we have the opportunity to look for better ways to maintain that fleet. Right now, each agency is doing its own maintenance contracts, doing its own oil change agreements. And most importantly, of course, we want to implement aggressively the governor's mandate with respect to E85. And if we can get more of an enterprise approach to that, we think that will facilitate that. So that's what we've got so far. We actually have more coming. In January, we're going to roll out, in fact, have just started a project called Enterprise Training and Development. There is really no single focal point for employee training and development in the state today. The Employee Relations Department used to do it, transferred that to Department of Administration, but it's a small two-person function. Every agency is doing its own training. This is a case where we're collaborating with MnSKU. MnSKU has in place a system by which employee training is made available online, tracked, registration is online, and we're employing and working with them to employ at least a similar system across all of state government. Tremendous agency interest. This project is being led by Joan Fabian, the correction commissioner. I should mention that every single one of these projects is led by a commissioner. Every single one has a project team and leader and is resourced across state government. To date, 600 employees have been involved in the Drive to Excellence. Next, what's coming is workforce succession planning. We are losing a lot of valuable talent and mind power in the state of Minnesota, and so we need to be planning for that. We are. Many agencies are doing, but again, one by one, sometimes not, some in varying forms. We would like to come up with a uniform way of doing workforce planning. It's more than just succession planning. It's taking the knowledge out of people's heads and documenting it now. It's doing leadership training and development. It's doing skills training and development. And it's really planning for those critical positions in state government and how we will replace them as early as 2010. The Small Agency Resource Team, or SMART, you will see in the budget documents, it is a small team within the Department of Administration that will provide HR and finance transaction support for those small agencies and boards that are really strapped. For services, we do it now for the Arts Board, for the Councils of Color, and for the Ombudsman for Mental Health. This simply expands that to other agencies. And then finally, the notion of shared services. Really what Gopal was talking about is the biggest of all shared services. It's providing a central business service, IT, in a central location. But there's a really key distinction, and I think, Representative Winkler, this gets to your point about the resistance. The fact that it is shared, the fact that there is ownership and a governance structure, that the user agencies actually have the ability to control investments, cost levels, service levels, response times, and that's done by service level agreements, makes it different than centralized control, take it or leave it kind of service. We would like to employ shared services across a whole variety of services and ultimately provide all of those back office services at the bottom of the pyramid in one location with service level agreements and governance by the state agencies. And that's the process we're going to start with SMART. We'll start small and get successes and do that for the small agencies and boards and eventually migrate to larger agencies and relieve them of the responsibility of doing that trivial transactional work so that they can focus on their mission. It's a model that has worked beautifully in Canada. Gopal mentioned several times Toronto. The province of Ontario has in their seventh year of implementation of shared services. They have tremendous efficiencies, wonderful service. The agencies love the service they receive, and that's what we aspire to. This, I just gave you all of those. talked without looking at the slides. We have a website. It's actually a quite rich website. It is at Excellence State MNUS, sorry, Madam Chair, but it's a site that has all of the 24 business cases, so if you wanted to know what else we might be looking at in the future, those business cases are there. We have a monthly newsletter. There's a lot of material about each one of these projects, so if you had an interest in any one of them, I do commend this website to you, or, you know, literally, we'll come and give you more detailed presentations on any of them. So this was fast. I feel like the FedEx commercial. But I wanted to give you the whole story. With that, I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Portman.
Thanks. I just have four questions. One, and I don't know if it fits in with the drive to excellence thing, but it just seems like looking at how the state government can be more energy efficient is something we should be thinking about because it's a cost savings, and it seems like that's the primary focus. Second, I had a question. You mentioned something about the E85 vehicles, and I know Frank Hornstein and Laura Broad had some hybrid vehicle language last year. I didn't know if there was any requirement that the state make any effort to purchase any hybrid vehicles.
Okay.
And then, well, my third and fourth question are really the same question. Has the Drive to Excellence looked at anything like Six Sigma or ISO sort of management philosophies, management techniques that private sector is used? I know Indianapolis used something called Lean Six Sigma and reduced costs and supposedly increased efficiency, and I just wondered if your group had looked at that and what kind of you'd found.
Energy efficiency first. As you know, the governor issued an executive order last year requiring 10% energy usage reduction in all state buildings. We've been implementing that, and we've actually had pretty darn good success considering we didn't have any money to do recommissioning or to do any special programs. But just through temperature control, some adjustments, this was across state buildings. The report that we're putting together right now for the first three quarters, you understand we don't get the utility bills till well after the quarter, we're looking at between 7 and 8% savings actually achieved in all state buildings covered by that executive order just through focus, just through giving employees tips, making them a little chillier in the winter and a little warmer in the summer, but having seminars with the building managers and engineers. We did a number of things to implement that, and I think we're pretty proud of our success, but we are coming back with a request for $500,000 for energy commissioning as part of the budget that you'll see in this committee from the Department of Administration. But to drive, what will really enable us to look better at energy utilization and the energy hogs is once we have this real property system, we can look at utility bills across the spectrum. We can enter into consolidated contracts for building retrofit. I mean, there's much that we can do once we know a little bit more about the buildings that we own. With respect to hybrid vehicles, we did support that legislation last year. We are really kind of encouraged by the fact that we now understand there is a hybrid truck coming available on the market, and we are working with MnDOT now to hopefully purchase at least one for a pilot truck. It's a heavy-duty truck, so we'll be very eager to see. I think it's an international truck. We are very eager to do anything to support the use of hybrids, including plug-in hybrids, in our fleet. The plain hybrids have not been available to us. We don't know how the state of Washington has managed to buy some, but we have not been able to crack the code of being able to get access to the ordinary hybrids. And then,
Six Sigma and ISO.
Well, I had to smile because you should know that I'm a Six Sigma Green Belt and a Lean expert, having done both of those programs in my stint at Honeywell. I'm a firm believer in Lean, particularly as it applies to government operations. Six Sigma, it's kind of a mixed bag. I know that PCA had some success in implementing Six Sigma, but their processes are way more technical, and there's a lot of technical content and data surrounding their processes, and that's what Six Sigma lends itself to. Lean, you can do in any process, and that is, we're not calling it that, but that's really what we're doing. And as we go through and look at implementing MAPS, we will not implement and simply automate the way we do things today. Right now, we already have over 120 people looking at many of our payment and other financial processes and HR processes to redesign them, to take out that non-value-added work, the waste, and so forth that Lean always looks for. So we will not implement MAPS until we have leaned out each of those processes. But we don't have a real formal program as such. We sort of figure you don't want to put too many formal programs on the table because then people get confused. And we've really gotten great acceptance of the Drive to Excellence. I'll just underscore what Gopal said. This is a project or program for which I think state government employees were hungry. And as long as they see it, that it isn't an effort to outsource everything, and it isn't an effort to eliminate their jobs, but to make their jobs richer and to prepare for the departures of employees and make their work easier when we do have those departures, they've signed on in, you know, by the scores.
Thank you.
Good. Any other questions? Thank you for, I'm sorry, we probably gave you less time than you deserve, but thank you for proceeding so efficiently.
Thank you very much.
Any other comments? Okay. Meeting adjourned.